You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, a place where individuality, passion, and dedication are right at home. Here for those of you who are seeking inspiration and chasing their dreams and insights into the day-to-day life of a modern woman in pharmacy. Your host is an entrepreneurial pharmacist, a pharmacy advocate, and founder of the Lux Pharmacist. Welcome to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to a very special episode on the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. I am so excited to be interviewing today's guest, and I'm sure most of you have already heard about this incredible woman. She holds two Bachelors of Science degrees, one in biochemistry and another in systems biology. She's a pharmacy student at Virginia Commonwealth University. She was also the 2019 Miss Virginia, and now Camille Schreier joins us as the 2020 Miss America. So with that being said, hello, Camille. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I am so excited to get to speak with you.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting.
I know. I honestly, I could not be more excited. And I'm sure everyone listening already knows who you are, but if anyone's literally living under a rock, could you just tell them a little bit about yourself, some general background?
Absolutely. My name is Camille Schreier. I started as Miss Virginia back in June, and I ended up winning the new job of Miss America in December of 2019. But outside of that, I am a P1 pharmacy student, or I guess kind of like P1 and a half, because I finished P1 year and then have now taken a hiatus to be Miss Virginia and Miss America. So I do that. In my free time, I love cooking and baking. And I grew up in Pennsylvania, but I represented Virginia because that's where I went to undergrad and grad school. So that's kind of my life in a little synopsis. But I'm very busy now with my new job, and I'm looking forward to going back and finishing my pharmacy education after.
I am sure you are incredibly busy. I absolutely love following you online, which I have for some time now, even as Miss America or Miss Virginia beforehand. But you talked a little bit about the fact that you had gone to school already. So you have a bachelor's degree in biochemistry, which is incredible to me, and systems biology. So what, after getting those, what made you want to go back to school and pursue your doctorate of pharmacy?
So I was kind of like a little bit of a confused student, as many of us are as we go through undergrad, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I ended up landing on biochemistry, or actually I started with systems biology, if I'm going to be accurate in my timeline. I started with systems biology, and then they told me, hey, you know, you're supposed to graduate in 2017, but you can't until 2018 because this is such a brand new program that we're not graduating anyone until 2018, so you're going to have to take a fifth year. And I was like, oh, okay, like I'll take a fifth year, but it's got to be worth my while. So I added on biochemistry because I'm crazy. So I was like, well, I'm not going to just sit here for a fifth year and take one class, right? If I can get 2 degrees out of the price of tuition. So I did that. And through that process, I started an internship with a pharmaceutical company during kind of like between what had been, what would have been like my junior and senior year, but fifth year messed that up. But either way, did 2 consecutive internships with a pharmaceutical company in New Jersey, which is not too far from where I grew up, and really enjoyed the pharmaceutical industry. And I was in kind of like a business marketing, business development role as an intern and worked under a PharmD. And I was like, wait, pharmacists can work in a pharmaceutical company, which is kind of my limited perception, like most of the public has, on what pharmacists can do. And so that really was the catalyst for me to want to enter pharmacy school. So then during my fifth year of college, I applied to pharmacy school and got in, and here I am.
See, I think that's actually hilarious that that is like your perception of PharmDs, because to everyone else, like either the general public, it's probably like a retail pharmacist. Yeah. And then going through school, at least from my experience, it's like, okay, you know, pharmacists, either they go into retail or they go into, you know, the hospital setting. Yeah. Industry to me has always been so incredibly interesting, but at the same time, I've never known anything about it, because it would be like, oh, you have to join, you know, the industry club or like try and get an industry rotation to kind of learn more about it. So it's like a total foreign just system to me, which I think is fascinating and amazing. And I know people who have done fellowships or who work in the industry, but to me, it's like, I literally know nothing about it. So maybe we can have another show one day where you're in the industry and you can educate me and everyone else, because I just know nothing, but it's always been so fascinating. And you said that that was kind of like a marketing business role that that Farm Day was doing.
So I worked basically in an in-house generics part of Sanofi Pharmaceuticals.
Okay, cool.
And so I was working on all of their authorized generic products. And it was interesting because we were basically trying to market generic products to, I mean, you don't can't market them to the public because it's not like a lot of the time, you know, public can get to choose what manufacturer they get on their medications. But for distributors and wholesalers and understanding the way that medications are marketed to the public. And it was funny because I was the only person on my team, with the exception of the person who led my business unit, who was the PharmD. But of our entire team, I was the only other person with a science background. And I'm sitting there like, how are these companies able to be able to effectively market something or make effective business decisions on products that are scientifically based when they don't have that clinical or scientific background? And I was like, I could really make a difference if I took the skills that I have in science and applied them into a business realm. And I was like, wow, I didn't even know that that could be something I could do. And I, like you, kind of had that perception of, you know, pharmacists go into retail pharmacy or they work in a hospital. Like, and that's what most people kind of assume that a pharmacist would do. But there's so many unique applications, and it's something that I think it was a good fit for me in terms of wanting to go to pharmacy school with this particular goal in mind, so that it's a lot more motivating when, you know, it gets really hard. And if you're like, well, this is really hard and I'm really unsure about what I'm going to do with this, it makes it a little bit more motivating for me when it gets difficult to know that there's a specific reason why I decided to do this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if there's no light at the end of the tunnel, then I mean, like, well, yeah, why am I studying for so long? Why am I in all these organizations? Especially like for me wanting to go into residency, I knew how much extra stuff I would have to be doing, but I knew like why I was doing it. So if I didn't know why I was doing it, I mean, yes, I love volunteering and yes, I love all these things, but I mean, I volunteered one time at like literally 4 a.m. and you know, I don't think I would be like busting my butt, like studying, trying to get like a 3.9 while doing all those things too, if I didn't think that like there was a specific purpose. So I could not agree more with that.
So true.
Is industry the field that you want to go into when you do graduate?
That's really my goal. That's what I still see myself doing. I was considering potentially getting a combined PhD with my PharmD, and I was starting to work on some research while, you know, I was in between my P1 and P2 year, but then that got interrupted when I won Miss Virginia and didn't go back to that. So you know, I definitely see myself in industry. I don't know particularly if it's going to be exactly what I had imagined, because now I have this new job and I am I'm very aware of the fact that this job can kind of change my career projection and maybe what I end up doing with pharmacy. But I definitely see myself in some type of a large scale organization. And now I get all these public speaking and communication opportunities that will make me stronger when I go to a company like that and be able to attack corporate America with a very different lens after doing this year of Miss America.
Absolutely. Girl, I think you could do anything and any company would be like, yes, I'll take you. Absolutely. I mean, companies may fight over you, actually.
Please. I hope so. I just want to be able to pay off my loans.
Oh, I know. It's like, oh, well, what job would you ideally love to have next year? It's like, any job? Like,
yes, exactly.
what are you willing to give me?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, one of the things, the funny thing for me is that I really, one of the great things I think about pharmacy is that it gives you stability in your life after graduation. And that was one of the things that drew me to it as well. And I jokingly say, because I love animals, that I want to go into farm so I can have a farm. So
I love that.
Enough money so I can have a bunch of dogs and chickens and own my own farm. And so I can, you know, like work really hard during the day and then come home and have my awesome home life too. But so that's my joke in my family, is that I'm going to own a farm through being in pharmacy.
I literally tell my boyfriend all the time, like, we need to have chickens and I want to have a goat. And he thinks that we're going to get a wallaby. And I'm like, that's absolutely not happening. Like literally like a baby kangaroo. He thinks it's adorable. And I'm like, that's taken it just a little too far. But yeah, I grew up in New Hampshire. So I love the farm idea. I think it is just so peaceful and relaxing.
So nice. So absolutely necessary after a long day in a pharmacy or whatever job you're doing in pharmacy.
Oh yes. I think a work-life balance is always an incredible thing, which I'm sure you don't have too much of this year. And I know that I don't have too much of that either as a resident, but like we said, you know, there is always a light at the end of the tunnel. So, and I think it's actually funny that you say like there are so many opportunities as pharmacists or in pharmacy, and I could not agree more, but I think that there's kind of like this uproar of, you know, I get questions all the time and it's so strange that are like, you know, the pharmacy industry doesn't pay anymore and people are telling me not to go into school and people are saying it's so oversaturated and, you know, all these things. And I'm like, where is this coming from? Like, I know that you may not, you know, graduate and get like a 30K sign-on bonus with CVS. Like, I'm sorry to tell you that that's not going to happen. I've had preceptors, you know, back in the day tell me that that was going to happen or that happened to them because they were in such a shortage. And it's like, maybe there's not a shortage of us, but if you are a dedicated, hardworking person who is passionate about the field, like, one, you're absolutely going to find a job, and two, there's a million different things that you could do.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate for being innovative. So, not, I mean, unsurprisingly, based upon my talent performance at Miss America, but I'm one of those people that if there seems to be a roadblock, whether or not, like, you know, maybe there's not a lot of jobs out there, like, it's not for like retail pharmacists, right? Like, so maybe that's harder to get. Well, then make up your own opportunity. Like, find something that's different that you can go toward that's an easier, you know, sell for you and your skills. And so that's why I was like, you know, I just got to find a place that I can work well in the pharmacy industry. And, you know, it kind of came about that I saw the job I wanted before I went into pharmacy. And so that made it a little easier too. But I always like to talk to people about, you know, new and innovative ideas in pharmacy too, because there's so many different things that you can do.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And I think I love the fact that you are Miss America as a pharmacy student, because I feel like it's shed such a good light on the field. And, you know, we're able to talk about a lot of things that we've been wanting to talk about because, you know, we have you in that media field. And you actually, it was during your first year of pharmacy school that you decided to run for Miss Virginia, was it, during your first year?
Yes. I mean, okay, just to give you a little idea of a timeline here. So it's like February of 2020. Okay. In April of 2019, mm-hmm, I was like, hey, I think I'm going to do a local competition for Miss Virginia. Haha. Like, this was kind of on a whim because I used to compete in competitions like Miss America as a teenager and then stopped, okay, because I wanted to focus on my academics. Mm-hmm. But it was always like that little back of your mind, like bucket list dream. And I was like, I would love to compete for Miss America, but I didn't want to be in a swimsuit on stage, number one, and I didn't have a traditional performing talent. So I kind of had written it off as like a non-possibility for me. I was like, I can't do Miss America, right? But they got rid of the swimsuit competition in 2018. And so I'm like sitting in my pharmacy school in the spring and, you know, you're spending a lot of the time and energy on academics, and sometimes you just want to spend time and energy on something else that's like non-related.
Oh, yeah.
And an ad came up on my Facebook for a local competition for Miss Virginia. So I was like, hey, like told my mom and dad, I was like, hey, I think I'm going to do this. And they're, of course, like, well, what are you going to do for the talent competition? So that's a whole nother story, but I figured it out. And 8 weeks later, after I won that local competition, I won Miss Virginia. And that was a shock. I mean, I never had expected that that would. I didn't think I would win the local competition. So winning actually Miss Virginia was mind-blowing to me. And again, had no expectations going into Miss America. This is my first experience with the organization. And girls, you know, dream of this their whole life. And for me, it was just, I think everything came together as it should have been. Like, everything was meant to be this year. It was actually, mm-hmm, kind of uncanny how things kind of lined up. But yeah, it was kind
of a new wholeheartedly
thing.
Believe in that. Like, I absolutely believe everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. 100%. And you said that Miss America recently got rid of the swimsuit competition. Mm-hmm. Is that when they started calling it a Miss America 2.0?
Yes, those things, okay, went hand in hand. And it just takes the judging criteria off of the physical body. And, you know, last year they still had evening gowns that they wore. We did wear evening gowns, but we just didn't like actually walk in them this year. But there's, okay, no judging of your physical characteristics, whether or not it's in an evening gown. There's no swimsuit at all anymore. And it's just focused on women's communication skills, what they have to offer through their experience. It's really a lot more like interviewing for a job now. And so that is, I mean, a fresh change that I think makes this so much more relevant in 2020.
See, I love that because I feel like women already get judged way too much on their appearance. And it's like, no, hello, I am an intelligent human being who has a lot to offer.
Yeah.
So I absolutely love what you said about like the Miss America 2.0, because even when you won and I kind of knew you were Miss Virginia, all these things, I'm like, wait, is she Miss America? What is Miss USA? Like what, like how many different pageants are there? And like, what is the difference? So I love that you touched upon like how different it is. And I know Miss America is much more focused on academia and scholarship and like, hello, I'm an intelligent, beautiful human being. Yes. But like, hello, I am intelligent and I have so much to offer. So I love that they have changed all of that.
It's so refreshing. And it is such a scholarship program. And you know, there's other systems out there. And so I kind of call it like Pepsi and Coke. It's like this kind of the same, but a little bit different. But we've really gone, even with all of the systems around the country, everyone has really gone into this female empowerment kind of mindset where we're showing everything that women can offer, from their brains to their beauty or wherever in between that does fall. And with Miss America specifically, what our prize package is scholarship money. And so to make it more like a, you know, you're like you doing residency interviews, you go and you interview for this opportunity. You're going to get paid for that job. It's something that's a lot more aligned with kind of a job interview type of format. I won $73,000 of scholarship money through that process. That's a huge thing for going to pharmacy school, and it's so expensive.
Yes.
So it's something very serious that we're winning. And so to have that process look like a job interview and show them why you deserve that amount of money, I think really aligns. It's kind of like Shark Tank in the sense that you are pitching yourself for almost like a grant. Like, okay, we're going to give you this stipend for your business and then go out and do that. So why do I deserve that much scholarship money to go further my education or pay for the education that I've already gone to? It's kind of the way that I see it. And I think it makes it, I mean, it's fun. It makes it more relevant. It keeps Miss America going. And the funny thing is, like, we started as a swimsuit competition in 1921. And so we've gone from there, which, first of all, that was really radical in 1921 because women had just pretty much been able to vote in the last few years.
Oh, God, I'm sure.
It was a huge ordeal. Like, it was really scandalous that they were doing
that.
So we're
always kind of scandalous.
Right? I know. And they were wearing one pieces and they wore like tights and bloomers underneath them. I mean, it was a big deal. So it's just funny how far it's come. And that now, like, when we see women's bodies on display all the time, that it's kind of like new to have a competition where it's completely not judged on your physical characteristic. Like, now that's kind of unique. And so we're always kind of pushing
that
boundary.
It's so refreshing.
It is.
So refreshing. And I think, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate and it doesn't happen to me all the time, but there's still a lot of times just in, I know when I was a student and even as a resident in my just day-to-day practice where things happen to me and it's like, I doubt that that would happen to my tall male co-resident. For example, one time, one of the nurses calls down to the pharmacy and I'm just staffing and she like starts explaining her problem to me. And then she stops and she's like, you can't help me. You're not a pharmacist. And I was like, I am a pharmacist. Like, I'm like super offended already. And I'm like, I am a pharmacist. And she's like, sorry, sweetie, you just sounded like a tech. Like, what does that even mean? And it's like, okay, I'm sure I sound young. I'm sure I sound girly. I'm a woman, so that would make sense. But I doubt if, you know, my co-resident who is a male answered the phone, I doubt you would stop what you were doing to interrupt and say, ugh, never mind, you can't help me anyway. You know, like, oh, sorry, sweetie. Like, I get things like that all the time. Or one time the attending was asking, this is again in the ICU, he was asking what the issue with lots of like IV lorazepam was and blah, blah, blah. And in the background, I'm like, propylene glycol. And one of the residents whips his head around and is like stunned, like utterly stunned in silence. And I was just like, hi.
That is so funny. Isn't that sad that you even have to feel that way? And I think especially like just, especially like your story specifically saying how two of those experiences were with other women. As women, it's so important for us to assume the best of each other and rise, like kind of help each other rise to the top, because it's so sad that other women don't take other women seriously sometimes, because if we all empower each other, then we can all do better. And that's really sad. And I'm grateful, you know, I haven't experienced that yet in pharmacy, but I'm sure I will have stories as I continue my way through. I know people think it's like, people don't necessarily believe that I am a scientist as Miss America, which I think is kind of comical because I have not completed a graduate degree yet. And I'm like, okay, well, I have to.
Please, you got a degree in biochemistry. Like that is so far above my level of any science.
Oh,
like,
stop.
No,
it's
like
hard though.
No, I know how hard it is. So I'm like, damn, she has a biochemistry degree. Oh my God.
And it almost killed
me. You're right. It's like, yes, you may call me beautiful. Yes, I love dressing up. Yes, I love cosmetics. Yes, I love being a girly girl. But it's like, why can't I do both of those things? Like, why can I not be intelligent and have so much to offer as a doctor, but also still, you know, dress the way I want to dress or express who I am? And I think it's all kind of about like a confidence thing and growing into who you are, because even as a student, I would go on rounds and things like that, or I would see other people who were in, you know, a higher position than me and who had been practicing for a while. And it was so refreshing to see like attendings on rounds wearing dresses and having these like glitter nail polish on, or having like bright blonde hair and wearing like hot pink dresses and just all these things. And it was like, you are expressing yourself, but you're literally also one of like the smartest people I've ever met. And it was just so inspiring to see like that you can do both attitude, and the fact that like they were also treated with such respect and people really valued them. So I think it's all just about representing yourself in a way that is positive and where you're not going to let anyone treat you that way, but you're always going to be respectful and just kind of show your worth. And I think people will come around to it eventually. But I think, especially when you go into a new position, I think you're always going to have a little bit of growing pains where you kind of have to like establish yourself maybe more than a man would, which again is sad, but I think it's just something that we deal with. But I think dealing with it in a positive and, you know, a classy attitude, because we're better than that, is
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that especially like you talk about like women wearing makeup and dresses and stuff in that particular professional role. That's something that's really interesting for me, because I didn't necessarily realize that until I got into college, because, you know, in science, I think we're starting to become more equal with our male counterparts in terms of numbers. Mm-hmm. We're getting there. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. But there's a big divide between the female community that is outwardly feminine and those who kind of tend to be more masculine, or maybe aren't people that are interested in makeup and hair and fashion, and that's totally okay too. But sometimes when you walk in there and you are that woman who wants to express her femininity in a science role, that those two things don't necessarily go together. And it's more than just gender at that point. It's really interesting, because I remember I walked into a biochemistry lab in undergrad and I was having my senior portraits done that day. So it was like the one day I wore makeup. My professor didn't know who I was.
Oh my God.
And I don't look that different with makeup, but it was really interesting because he actually like assumed that I wasn't in the class and was like asking me to leave. Oh. And he just didn't know who I was, because I normally, you know, I'm a student. I just didn't care. I don't normally wear makeup on like a daily basis, but a special occasion, right? And even as I continue and go through this process, I always see that, you know, women who want to express themselves in that way maybe are risking not being taken as seriously. And that's so strange to me. And so that's kind of why I think it's fun to be the Miss America who does science with my crown on sometimes, or like, you know, has fake lashes on underneath my safety goggles. Like, do both. There's no reason you can't do both of them at the same time.
Absolutely. I love what you just said about like the crown and science and everything. I graduated summa cum laude, which is literally like the top of the class, which I never thought I would do, but that's like 3.94.0. And I was so proud of that. But I walked across that stage and they said, you know, Dr. Madeline Aquilano, summa cum laude. And I had these freaking sparkly heels on and fake lashes. And I was like, I'm owning this moment, because like, this is who I am. But I also freaking earned that. Like, you can't tell me that I did not earn summa cum laude, like as a title honor to graduate with, because that was like blood, sweat, and tears. I just loved that like moment of my name being said, and that, and me having a dress on and sparkly heels and eyelashes. And I was like, I just felt so good. I was like, this is my moment.
That was, hey, that's going to be my graduation, hopefully with some kind of cum laude. I mean, at this point, who knows? But it's, of course, hard. And so especially graduating with that kind of an honor is really difficult. So I give you huge props, and I'm glad that you did it with sparkly shoes and eyelashes too.
No, yeah. So I love that people have to take you so seriously because you have those degrees and because you're going to get your doctor of pharmacy and you are Miss America and you're talking about such important things this year that I think it's going to wake a lot of people up to the fact that, hey, we can do both. And there's literally nothing wrong with that. Just because, you know, I decide to wear hot pink lipstick one day does not mean that I'm any less intelligent, or, you know, it doesn't mean that I have nothing to offer. So I think it's like a good just wake up call in general for America. And I am just so here for it. Like the women empowerment movement, it's just like my bread and butter. Like I eat it. I love it.
I love that. It is so cool. And it's fun to do it in this role now too.
Yeah, absolutely. So to talk a little bit about what you do have planned for this year, your social impact, which is kind of, you know, something that you get to focus the entire year on, is called Mind Your Meds. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So Mind Your Meds focuses on drug safety and abuse prevention from pediatrics to geriatrics. And so that's its full title. Mm-hmm. I developed this because I grew up with a mom that was a nurse, and I got sick a lot as a kid. And so we went to the pharmacy very frequently, and my mom would look at cough and cold medications, and she'd always like look at the back of the box and read what was in it and read how frequently I was supposed to take it. And like, I knew that NyQuil had multiple medications in it versus like Tylenol was one. And I learned about that as a kid, and that was so normal for me. And when I got to pharmacy school, I really quickly realized that that was not normal, and that I was really lucky to have a parent that really understood my care. And I started to experience, you know, learning how to teach parents on medication safety for their kids, but also maybe if they're caring for an older adult, how to be safe giving those people medications, or even yourself. Like a lot of my friends, I had a friend who used to, you know, take NyQuil by just chugging it out of the bottle. And I'm like, that's not how that's supposed to work. But a lot of people do that. And, you know, it's really funny because I'm like, why? Like, did you not just, you know, take a moment to figure out what you're supposed to do? And you're not going to get, you know, if you don't take an effective dose, you're not going to feel better. And then you don't know when you can take it next. So there's so many variables that people don't necessarily consider. So that was number one on the medication safety part. But then I took a naloxone training session with my school. And for those who don't know what that is, who are listening, it's the opioid overdose reversal medication. Mm-hmm. And I started to learn about how huge the opioid crisis was. And it's not something, I'm grateful that I haven't had personal experience with the opioid crisis, but I have family that have. And so being able to learn how huge that impacts our community, it was really humbling for me. And I wanted to then combine those two things and create this platform. And a lot of the opioid abuse that happens in our country comes out of misuse of prescription medications. So I feel like those go together really well. And I'm excited to focus a lot of my time on that this year.
Yeah, I honestly, I am so excited for your social impact initiative because I think it's so needed. One of the things that actually got me into pharmacy in the first place was I had really bad migraine headaches in high school. And they gave me so many different medications. I mean, I was scoring high on like the anxiety and depression scales because I was missing so much school. I just like, didn't even know how to handle it at 16, 15, whatever it was. So I had all these medications, SSRIs. I had like things like Compazine, which I literally thought was like going to take away my headache pain. Now I know it's, you know, mainly for nausea and all these different things. So I had absolutely no idea what I was taking or why I was really taking it. I had prednisone tapers for weeks on end, and then I would like gain weight and just be so confused and even more upset. And so I like one of my biggest things is I will never leave a patient after meeting them and like giving them medications or, you know, talking about their regimens without them knowing exactly why they're taking something and exactly what is normal and when they should call their doctor and when they should get help and things like that, because I never want people to feel, you know, kind of that like alone, helpless feeling like I did. So I love just the fact that, you know, you're talking about educating the public, because I think there is so many just misconceptions, but also, you know, people think that certain things are safe when they're potentially really unsafe. And the opioid crisis, of course, is such a large problem. And luckily, I haven't had, you know, any personal experience in with, like within my family and friends, similar to you, but I do know how prevalent it is. And I took a naloxone course in school as well. And one of the things that we actually do is our, within our residencies, we get naloxone prescriber certified. So that's something that you can do through the state of Connecticut. So we can prescribe our patients naloxone, either at the pharmacy. So retail pharmacists can do that, or I could simply write a prescription for it if I was certified and I would have an NPI number and all those things. So it's definitely, a very good time to be in pharmacy, to be able to advocate for some of these things, but it is, kind of unfortunate to realize like the current state of things.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, I've been able to work with the DEA now on National Drug Take Back Day, which is another thing that I think that is so needed in our communities, because people are, you know, we're handing these medications over the counter, but we're not always, as pharmacists, helping people to understand how to dispose of those medications if they have extras.
Oh, yeah. We get that question a lot.
Oh, my gosh. It's such a huge problem. And I don't think, again, that was something I didn't realize until I got into this and was really doing it every day.
And especially when it comes to like controlled substances, I mean, no pharmacy is going to take that back. Like you legally can't. So I think having, you know, things in place, and I saw you, you know, on your Instagram stories and things like that when you're doing the DA stuff. And I was like, yes.
It's so important to be able to help people with that, because that's one of the number one ways that people are starting to abuse opioid medications. And whether or not even if it's not an opioid, just having extra medications in your home that aren't being used. I mean, it's a poison risk for children. It's just not doing you any good, and just get rid of it in the right way. And so that was something that that's a really big thing that I advocate for. And I'm also kind of like an environmentalist in the sense that I hate when people dispose of them improperly and then it can hurt the environment. And I think it's our responsibility as healthcare professionals to help our patients as much as we can know what to do when they have extra things left over, or to work with the prescribers from a pharmacy perspective on being able to prescribe appropriate numbers of tablets or whatever it might be, just in terms of volume. Because I think some prescribers don't always necessarily know how much to prescribe, and then they're like a month's supply, but use whatever you need, and then they have extra. So it's a web of issues that we can help to address through this.
Absolutely. And I think, and I don't know that this is true for all states, but I know for Connecticut, even if it's a C2 prescription, a patient can ask for a partial refill or a partial fill. So they can say, you know, oh, I was prescribed 30 tablets, but, you know, I only want 7 of them right now. And then I think they can come back within 30 days and get the rest. So I think, you know, initiatives like that or laws like that are also really good, because a lot of the times, maybe a prescriber wants to prescribe you a little bit more than you may need, because they, first of all, can't call in a prescription for it. So it's like, you know, how are they going to get you that prescription? They don't probably really want to give you another prescription without seeing you. And there's like all these logistics. So I think that, you know, just little things like that. And even just people being aware that they can take a partial instead of getting, you know, the full fill, or how many they should be taking and the risks of taking them. Because a lot of the times, you know, people think, oh, like this is a prescription medication, it must be so safe. But I mean, morphine is literally heroin, just with, you know, two groups removed from it. So I just don't think people truly understand like the full risk of, you know, they think street drugs, but it's like, no, those drugs are actually very similar to your prescription medications.
Yes, that is so true. And I think in Virginia, I'm not super, super up to date with the Virginia laws since I'm so new to the pharmacy world, but I'm almost positive that you can do the same thing with the partial fill in Virginia. And that's so true. And, you know, I've seen so many people come in and they're just, you know, addicted to these prescription medications because they've been taking them for so long. And it's really important for us to give patients, kind of empower them to be able to make choices to keep themselves safe with those pain medications, because they're right in the right application. There's certain applications where they're absolutely correct. But then there's also sometimes where there's other ways that we can help to manage pain, whether or not it's over-the-counter remedies, or even just like things like just ice packs and heat and like just elevation things that we can
help with. Topical agents.
Yeah, so
you
know, many
go other to things. The chiropractor if you need to, go to PT if you need to.
So true.
And a lot of the time it's like injury based and you can do kind of other things for that too. So
exactly.
Yeah, I think that there are so many other options out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping that people are, you know, empowered to talk to their provider about all of that and to help providers understand that their patients need other options sometimes and to give them and think outside the box. That's kind of my theme of the day is to think outside the box.
I like that. Think outside the box. Do you have any specific like events planned this year in terms of your social initiative? Or are you still kind of working those things out?
Oh gosh, you know, my schedule is filling up very quickly. I do a lot of different events throughout the country really. And I'm doing some overdose symposiums. I'm advocating for National Drug Take Back Day. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to Congress with the DEA later, I think in April. And when I tell you my months are booked and booked, I couldn't even name every event I'm doing with that.
That's why you have people.
Exactly.
It was so funny when I went to schedule this interview with you, which thank you for finding the time to do.
Of course.
You know, it was like, oh, go through my manager. And I was like, oh my God, like I get to talk to a manager and I'm like, this girl is so important.
I'm not cool enough to have a business manager.
No,
but
no,
the thing
you
is,
are, you are.
I have to because I have so many things coming at me. And so, but that is really, I've gotten so many cool opportunities that I get to go to just being from healthcare. I mean, I think I'm going to even be at the USP's conference, which was a really big thing for me, just pharmacy related, to be able to work with the USP and have them want me to come talk about my initiatives. That's something that I think is like a potential thing that I'm going to this year as well. It's been really amazing, the interest from the pharmacy community and just healthcare in general to have me come share my story. But it's also it's a lot of pressure because a lot of the times I'm presenting and sharing my message with those who have a lot more education than I do. So I like went back to my pharmacy school and presented to my professors and I was like, oh, no pressure at all. But it's a wonderful way to come back.
Yeah. It's kind of that like imposter syndrome. Like you really need to, I'm sure it's so overwhelming, but you 100% earned this opportunity. So, I mean, and I know you're taking everything, you know, day by day, but you're owning it and you should own it and you should get everything out of this year that you can. So, and I think you're doing that. I think you're doing like a boss job and I love following you.
Thank you. I try.
And what does it mean to you to be able to be a role model to so many women out there, young women, you know, young girls who want to go into science or just, you know, women in general who are going after their dreams? And I think it's amazing that you have this platform. And I know you value it obviously so much, but what is like the number one thing that you want to relay to women out there?
I hope that I can relay a message of authenticity to really all people, but especially that of young women, because I think that we're the demographic that need it the most sometimes, because we're on this social media culture where we're just constantly comparing ourselves to other people and trying to imitate this perfection that people can kind of come across. And it's so not accurate to what is reality. And so I am hoping that young people and young women are able to see that when you're truly yourself, even if you take a risk and do something like, you know, perform a science demonstration on the Miss America stage, that when you're authentically true to who you are and what your talents are, that's when you're going to be the most successful. And whether or not that's in your career, if you are looking for a pharmacy career, for example, and maybe you feel like you're really, really pushed to go do a residency, but you kind of have a heart for community and you feel like maybe that's something that you want to do, don't let the people around you change you. Do what you think is right for you, even if it feels uncomfortable, because it will sometimes. And even if you're the only one doing that, like I'm probably the only one of my friend group who wants to do industry and be an industry pharmacist. And that's okay. And don't let other people change you, because I think that really, truly being authentic is always going to be what makes you the most successful.
I love that. I am all about one, not letting other people tell you what to do, just because I have that like Italian personality where I'm like,
exactly, right?
Exactly. But yeah, like go after what you want and do not let anyone tell you no, because you're right. Like the fact that, especially within the field of science or healthcare, I mean, we have to work hard to get where we want to be. But if we're working hard to be somewhere where we don't want to be, you know, that's not going to shine through. And it's, you know, it's not good for anyone. So I love that, you know, be your authentic self. if you're a girly girl, if you're a tomboy in that aspect, you know, in your personality, but also in, you know, what you pursue to do. So I love that. I think that is an excellent note to end on.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me on my podcast today. I know you're a very busy woman, and I have loved getting to know you. And yeah, I am so ready to follow your journey this year, and I'm sure everyone else is. For people who do want to follow along, where can they follow your journey as Miss America?
Absolutely. So on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, I am at Camille Schreier, my first and last name. And then if you want to follow Miss America specifically, same deal, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Miss America. So make sure you follow both so then you can see what I'm doing personally, but also as Miss America.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Camille.
Of course. Thank you so much for your time.
That's all for this episode of the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Be sure to share this podcast on your social media networks, and let's reach more innovative pharmacists with a flair for style, a creative approach to life, and a passion for patient care. Learn more. Check out theluxpharmacist.com.